Welcome back.
I'm back. And I'm back with Rational Basis. good
How
morning,
much time?
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
I'm sorry I interrupted you. You want to...
That's okay. Good morning. My name is Jennifer Dobson, and I represent Mr. Lewis.
And we asked you to specifically address the equal protection argument that's made in this case, and it was also made in another case that we did not set for oral argument.
Okay, Your Honor. The issue here is whether RCW 43.437541 violates equal protection because it requires some felony offenders to pay multiple DNA collection fees, even though their DNA need only be collected once to fulfill the legitimate purpose of the statute.
You know, the statute says that the fee shall be imposed for each sentence. So I know there's a lot of debate between you and the state about what the class is or what the class isn't. But isn't it really treating everyone the same, as in each sentence? Aren't they all in the same class?
Well, that puts them as the same affected persons. So for the purposes of equal protection, you need to have people that are similarly situated. So all of these...
they're all being sentenced.
They are all felony offenders being sentenced. But the classification here is that when you're sentenced once, you pay a $100 DNA fee for collection, analysis, and retention. And once your DNA is collected, analyzed, and retained...
Has the statute been amended so the fee isn't really truly characterized as a collection fee, but really a fee to help maintain an entire database?
Again, it's I believe it's been amended to say that it's to cover collection, analysis, and retention.
But if the DNA sample, I don't have the exact words, but if the Washington State Crime Lab already has a DNA sample, then you're not required to give another one. Isn't that what the statute says?
Well, it says that you're not. However,
it does say that.
Practice a lot, yes. But it still says you have to pay the fee.
I understand that.
Are there ongoing costs to maintain a database? I mean, we get charged money every year for license fees and other sorts of things associated with a computer system. Why isn't it appropriate to charge that for every felony conviction?
Well, and again, the $100 fee, why wouldn't they then, if they're going to keep someone's DNA, put that in the first $100. We presume that that $100 is going to, and this statute says this, to collect, analyze, and maintain the DNA database.
So the third time around, you're helping with the maintenance rather than the collection, but it's still rational, isn't it? I mean, the law doesn't require that fine-tuned accounting that you're urging on us, does it?
Well, the statute actually does keep some fine-tuned accounting there by sending some of it back to collection agencies and so forth.
Well, that's just allocating baskets of money without going down to the $100 level and saying, okay, we're going to charge you a fine of $30 for this, $20 for that. The legislature doesn't have to do that, does it?
They do go down to the $100 level, and they say, of this, $20 is going back to the collecting agency.
When all the money gets put in the basket, they divide the basket up that way.
Yeah.
Isn't that a rational basis to allocate budgeting?
Well, I think what the state, and I think this goes to your question, I hope, the state's arguing the database serves the purpose of investigating and maintaining, so multiple offenders should pay more. But this is not a fee, it's not a fee contingent on use. It's a fee contingent that's mandatory. So it doesn't matter how many times I use the database with your DNA or your particular crime or anything like that. The maintenance and the retention and the collection is the same for the first time you collect it.
You're advocating for some sort of loser pay system? I mean,
I'm just saying that would be rational if you're talking.
Well, so we've got somebody on their third felony conviction, and we want to find out whether it's necessary to actually take a swab or whether they've already got it. How do we find that out without there being any cost to anyone? How do we find out the answer, whether he's already in the database, without it costing any money? any agency, any person, anybody, anything.
Well, again, I think what we're saying is that is in the first $100. That is included in the first $100 that's collected.
Because you say that, but where do I find that? It seems like for the first, it wouldn't be, because for the first $100, we're not interested in making that call. We know it's his first offense. We know we're going to take a swab.
What the legislature is doing is funding the maintenance and use of that database. Now, let's say that you have someone in there that they never have to take a hit on again. They never have to look it up again. You're still paying the $100.
That's so your database entry fee.
For maintenance, for keeping your DNA in the system for as long as you need.
For what maybe is a fair system, but how does that show that the system the legislature adopted isn't rational?
Because it only takes one time to put this in and maintain the database.
It doesn't just take one time to maintain the database. Computer licenses have renewal fees annually. Computer systems have to be upgraded periodically. Equipment has to be replaced. There are ongoing costs of maintaining this database, even if you don't have to have an inquiry. Just to have it available costs money, and it costs money every year. And somebody has to pay for that, and the legislature has made a determination that the people that necessitate the need for this database should bear part of the cost of maintaining the entire system. What's irrational about that? It may not be the fairest. It may not be the most efficient. It may not meet the economic professor's idea of greatest utility. But what's irrational about it?
And what, Your Honor, what we're saying is it absolutely is. And it has to be rational in connection with the purpose of the fee. And the fee here, the purpose of the $100 is to cover collection and to cover maintenance and analysis. That's, okay, what, I'm sorry, may I finish my thought?
You may.
The $100 covers all of that. There's nothing saying that someone has to keep paying after that to maintain the maintenance.
You have your statements.
Good morning again. I am still Jennifer Joseph, representing the state of Washington.
Who has access to the database?
I can't tell you who all has access to it. Obviously, the crime lab does, and police officers seem to be able to access it, but I don't know the workings.
If we have somebody who's convicted of a felony and his DNA is entered into the database, and 6 years later he's suspected of a felony, presumably the police can access the database if they have a DNA sample to test. So they do that. Turns out it's not him. Not a match. He, the person who paid the $100, is totally unaware that this event occurred. But has he benefited from the maintenance of the DNA system?
Absolutely.
Okay. So maybe you can address the dispute between the state and Mr. Lewis about analyzing whether there are different classifications.
Sure. I think that is the...
Are there? I mean, the statute seems to treat everybody the same, but the argument is it doesn't because it treats first-time offenders differently than someone who has a second, third, fourth felony.
Right, just like all parts of the SRA treat them differently. I mean, it is rational to have an offender pay this fee every time he chooses to commit a crime, because it is the choice to commit the crime that necessitates that database. So a person who commits one crime and never commits another crime is simply not similarly situated to somebody who commits multiple crimes.
Why not?
The impact that they inflict on the community is different. The resources required to bring this person into compliance with the law or punish him for not complying with the law is different, and it's worse for people who could continue to commit crimes. All of those things,
Is the DNA database cost affected by whether someone is a first offender, third offender, or 18th offender?
The maintenance of the system?
I mean, we may spend more money for incarceration, and we may spend more money for some other things, but how do we spend different amounts of money based on how many times someone has committed a crime? I mean, it strikes me that the cost of maintaining the system is static except for the costs of entry, and so that if you're an 18th offender, your cost contribution should be the same as if you're the third-time offender, that there isn't really any difference.
Well, what about accessing the database and making the comparisons that are necessary?
Once you're in there, we're going to want to check and see if it's you no matter what, so it's the same. I'm thinking this is an argument in your favor, so don't be so resistant. I'm having trouble figuring out why there is some cost saving if you've been in the system before.
Well, there's not, and that's the premise, and I think if you read Mr. Lewis's brief, it says this quite clearly, that the whole premise is that this fee only funds collection, and that once your DNA has been collected, you shouldn't have to pay it again. And that would make sense if that was true, but it's not.
And it also assumes that there isn't any ongoing cost of maintaining this system, and that Microsoft and Apple don't charge us money each year to continue to use their products, that once we buy something from them, they take care of us forever, contrary to most of our experience.
Sure, and not only that, but you have to pay people to operate the systems, and you have to pay them every month. So there are all kinds of reasons why it makes sense to have a offender who requires us to access that database more than once to pay that
fee. What percentage of these assessments never get paid at all?
That I can't tell you.
That's not the record.
The DNA fee, as I understand it, is the supposed to be the last thing that gets paid, although I've also read that recoupment is also the last thing.
Everything up to the last 600 could be remitted.
Right, and the last 600.
I think we established that earlier today. So if that's so, then this would be within the last 600. Mm-hmm. But given that this is within the last 600, I guess what I'm getting at is, what's the tipping point where so many of these assessments never get satisfied that there isn't a rational basis for the assessments?
That is an interesting question.
Well, thank you.
I don't have an answer for it.
Yeah. Okay.
I do appreciate that the court directed us to what to focus on in this argument. I've made my arguments in my brief, and I don't really have much to add. So if there are no further questions, I will yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I don't have a direct answer to that question about the tipping point, but I can point you to a multiple agency fiscal note summary that says that when they made the DNA fee mandatory, that they actually didn't expect any change to the revenue in felony matters because it was only reaching those people who had hardships prior.
I mean, I don't understand that answer. When they made the DNA felony assessment mandatory,
the fee,
that would be revenue neutral?
That's what they said. So because previously
nobody's paying it?
It means that there's so many costs.
It was already being ordered for those people that judges thought had the ability to pay.
Right.
So when you included those that judges did not think had the ability to pay, the legislature didn't think it was going to raise a whole lot more money.
Exactly.
Okay. That's
well, and since
logical.
It's the last cost to be enforced,
right.
I'm not sure there would be information yet.
Exactly. All we have is the information on what's happening to people who can't pay
in both sums. What's your opinion on what the tipping point would be? At what point is the order not complied with to such a large degree that a court should find that it's irrational for the legislature to impose the fee at all in the first place?
Well, I guess that would be why we have this as an applied challenge, and I think Mr. Lewis brings up the substantive due process, so we're bleeding over into that, but the idea is that the tipping point is that whenever you cannot and do not have the likely ability to pay, it's irrational. That at that point, there's going to be so much in collections. And Blazina cites a lot of secondary authority that has a lot of
these. Is there any data on what percentage of the first-time offenders who are ordered to pay, as opposed to those in what you contend is a separate class, those that are subsequent offenders?
I have not seen any data separated out like that.
You haven't argued that the legislature acted irrationally because it imposed a penalty that didn't expect anybody to pay. It's not going to raise any money. Why is it rational to impose it?
I believe that was an implication, but it was certainly raised in amicus. I'm sorry, I'm mixing the two cases, the amicus and Shelton. It is something that, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I would certainly adopt that as part of the argument, is that it's irrational to have someone pay something that they cannot pay, and this is part of that. They knew they could not pay it, and that was an irrational act.
Thank you. The next case is State v. Rogers.